Hello, everybody. Welcome to my home. I'm Dennis Prager, and this is indeed my home for our almost weekly fireside chat. There are a couple of weeks a year where it's just not possible for whatever reason, but I try to do it every week, no matter how much I travel, because this is a really good way to just talk to you totally spontaneously about anything that is on your mind and whatever obviously is on my mind. It's not rehearsed. I'm not reading from any cards. And I decide what I'll talk about 5 minutes beforehand. So it's really, as we would say, spontaneous and fresh. So welcome indeed. Good to be with you. So I don't always take, in fact, most of the time on these things, I take some really big issue in life, in either people's personal lives or the country's life or the world's life, and not really a news item. But this time I'm going to base it on a news item, but the issue is much larger. So if you're watching this 6 months from now, and I do hope people watch Fireside Chats from a year ago, they're meant to be relevant ongoing. It will still be relevant to you in the future. But I'm going to take a news item even before we even know all the details. Because what I want to say is sort of irrespective of what details we will learn. So there is this issue in Philadelphia with regard to a Starbucks where to what we know at the moment that I am now talking to you, clearly more will come out, is that there were two black men who were at the Starbucks. They were there for a period of time. One of the things we don't know now, at least as I'm speaking to you, is how long they were just sitting there. And then one of them apparently asked to use the facilities, use the restroom, bathroom, men's room, women's room, whatever term is in these days. And they said, our policy is that if you are not a paying customer, we don't allow you to use the restroom. Which, by the way, is entirely appropriate. They're not their Starbucks in order to provide bathrooms for the public. They're there to provide bathrooms for those who are using or buying Starbucks. If we can't agree on that, and pretty much anything I have to say now will be irrelevant, but I think almost everybody agrees. Otherwise, what you would have, you realize, is people would just be lining up from, including in urban centers, a lot of homeless people would be lining up just to use the facilities, and I am told by people who know more about this than I that there are people who use the facilities to take a shower in the sink, and they're in there for a half hour or longer. And obviously, that's not fair to the people who are paying for a Starbucks coffee. Is that clear? I mean, we're talking about fairness, which is supposed to be a big concern. And I understand that it is. It's fairness to other customers. It's not just fair. It doesn't matter to Starbucks, in effect. I mean, it matters to Starbucks if the restrooms are trashed. But it doesn't, you know, theoretically, Starbucks couldn't care less so long as people are buying their coffee. But they want to make it available to their customers. So they said, this is the story as we know it, so you can't use it. And then they stayed even longer without getting anything. And they finally, for whatever reason, is obviously not the first time this has happened, whether the person is white or black or any other ethnic or racial group. And the police were called in and asked to remove them as they were doing nothing there except sitting there. So the police came, and one might add that the police included in the video that we have, there were at least two officers who were black. And by the way, the police commissioner who defends the police is also black. I think these are little relevant points. What I have not found out, and I think is relevant, though not at all decisive, is what was the color of the manager and the barista, is that how you pronounce it, barista? Who was working there and who asked them to buy something. And that has never been told, which is very odd to me. Because if you're going to make the charge of racism, The implication is that the barista and the manager are white. Otherwise, you would have to charge that that blacks were being racist against blacks. Now, you know, there are people say that that's eminently possible, but it becomes a little bizarre after a while. So the implication is they're white, but we have never been told that. Now, the police came, and according to the commissioner, the police commissioner, a man by the name of Richard Ross, who is black, he said the police asked them three times to leave. They refused each time, and I heard him say, I'm very much a stickler for facts. So this is a fact. As reported by the black chief of police, that they mocked the police as, for example, saying something to the effect, who are you? You only make $45,000. Who are you to tell me what to do? Which is so disgusting when you think about it. I mean, my God, to mock a person based on their salary, that's really low-life sort of behavior. Anyway, they left without incident, and they were let go hours later and not booked, and Starbucks didn't press charges, but Starbucks is being charged with racism. The CEO of Starbucks has said, I want to meet with these people and apologize, but I'm not sure Starbucks did anything wrong. I say I'm not sure. Maybe they did, but as of now, I don't know what they did that's wrong. See, here's one point that I want to make. I divide the world between right and wrong, not between black and white. The left divides the world based on race, gender, and class, but not based on right and wrong. So it's as if a black in any confrontation with a white can't be wrong, so to speak. I mean, which is an absurdity, and it's racist. It's anti-black. It treats blacks as not real, as not. If you don't make demands on people equally, then you don't think of them as equals. Think about that. If you lower the moral demands you make on a group, whether it's religious or ethnic or racial, then you think less of that group. Isn't that obvious? It is obvious, in case you didn't know. It was really a rhetorical question. Okay, now, next. Forgive me. I got to light it again. Okay, so forgive me, but here we go to the second point. The second point is, I have always believed that consumers have obligations, not just rights. In fact, I've written about this. It's called the Storekeeper Law. You could look up Dennis Prager, the Storekeeper Law. I took it from my religion, Judaism. There's a very interesting law in the Jewish law book called the Talmud, and it goes as follows. You are not allowed to ask the price of an item in a store. You are not allowed to ask the storekeeper the price of an item if you know you won't buy it. If you know you won't buy it. This is an ancient Jewish law. And the reason is, you cannot raise the hopes of the storekeeper for no reason. I consider that one of the most beautiful laws in Judaism. And I believe everybody should live by it, whatever their religion or no religion. I'll give you an example. A guy at a camera store told me once, exactly a perfect example. He said some woman had taken about a half hour of his time looking at all these various cameras, and then at the end said, so do you know where I could get it cheaper on the internet? I mean, I can't even find the right word, chutzpah, the nerve, the audacity, the coldness of that is just astonishing. This guy just gave her a half hour of his time, showed her the cameras that they have there. She knew the whole time she's not going to buy it at the store. Took his time and then asked, where can I get it on the internet cheaper? People do that without asking. They just know in advance they'll get it on the internet, but they use the store. This is done in clothing, in electronics, in household goods. That's immoral. you are using others and unfairly. You're abusing their brick and mortar place. What do I learn from that? A lot of things, but the thing that I want to stress now is that consumers have obligations, moral obligations, not just rights. You know the difference between my religious upbringing and many people's religious upbringing and a non-religious upbringing in today's America and today's Western world, not just America? I was raised with an obligations-based outlook on life. Today, people are raised with a rights-based outlook on life. Let me tell you something. You'll make a lot better society if people are raised with moral obligations than with rights. Rights are important, and rights are implied by obligations. But you make a better person if you teach them you have obligations to other people, not just rights. So when I am in a Starbucks or any other place, and I want to use the bathroom, I'll get a drink. I mean, it makes perfect sense. That is what my obligation to that establishment is. And if I were waiting for somebody, and that's why I said I'd like to know, I have to believe it was a long period of time. They don't bother people of any color after 10 minutes. So it must have been quite a serious period of time. And nothing would have happened, by the way, if they didn't even ask to go to the bathroom. So we don't know all the details, and I'd love to know all the details. But if you are there, if I were there, I'll use me. I'm there, and I say, I'd like, may I use the men's room or the facilities or the restroom? And they say, well, we really only give it to customers who have bought something here. I would say, fine. Then let me buy my latte or whatever it is, my iced coffee. That's my drink of preference at Starbucks. And fine. And that'd be the end of it. Or I'll say, I promise you, I just want to go. I don't want it to cool off. Or I'll order it now. I'll pick it up after I use the bathroom. Or I'll get it right after I use it or something. But they didn't do any of that. They acted like they are owed the bathroom. That's not right. They're not owed the bathroom. They owe something too. And that's the story. That's it. But because it was blacks and because there is a dominant culture of whites are almost all racist. And if they're not consciously racist, they're unconsciously racist. And I think it's a lie. It's overwhelmingly a lie. And it doesn't do blacks any good. Why would you want to walk around thinking you're hated? What a crappy way to walk through life. I pity black kids who were raised by black parents or who watch whites tell them you're hated at school. I pity them. What a lousy way to walk through life. As a Jew, I was familiar with this growing up. I was born a little after the Holocaust. And I remember there were Jews, especially from Eastern Europe, who thought that, you know, the overwhelming majority of Christians hated them. And my grandfather believed that. When my grandfather, I'll never forget, my grandfather came from Austria before the war, way before World War II, and came in the early 20th century. Anyway, when I would be in a car with him as a kid, and he'd be cut off by a driver, which happens to everybody, he would yell, "Anti-Semite!" And I remember thinking, "Papa, how do you know the guy's an anti-Semite? How does he even know you're a Jew? Maybe he cut you off because he's a lousy driver, not because you're a Jew." So I didn't grow up thinking, oh, Jews are hated. And I still don't believe, Jews are hated, by the way. Jews are hated in some serious parts of the world, and Israel is isolated as it is, not because it's bad, it's one of the most wonderful countries in the world, but because it's a Jewish state. I fully acknowledge that. But in America in particular, this is like been a Garden of Eden for Jews. There are anti-Semites in America, but America is not an anti-Semitic country. There are racists in America, but America is not a racist country. So it's the whole thing is very sad and tragic, and the obsequiousness of Starbucks management is just awful. That they wouldn't back up their own employees. What does it feel like to work for Starbucks now? If there's any bad publicity, they'll throw me to the lions. That's what any one of you working for Starbucks should have contempt for the company right now. The black police commissioner could stand up on behalf of his police, but the Starbucks CEO can't stand up on behalf of his employees. Now, if his employees were wrong, I don't want him to stand. I said I divide between right and wrong. But he doesn't know that they were wrong. And now I think it's a woman, the manager of that Starbucks, has now left Starbucks. It's just sad. It's just wrong. What did she do? She implemented Starbucks policy. Starbucks looks much worse to me now than it did a few days ago, because of the cowardice of its management. Anyway, as I have said, I said on my radio show today, in America there's far more fear of left than there is fear of God. That's another subject for another time. So, some thoughts on that subject. Now to your questions. And I will read you the name. Okay, here we go. Okay. All right. Mariano, 23. The numbers I give are the ages. In Miami. Do you have any advice for dating someone with different spiritual beliefs? Well, different spiritual beliefs is probably a euphemism. Spiritual beliefs are not the issue. Religious beliefs are the issue, and that's what I assume. I assume you mean of a different religion. Yes, I do have thoughts on it. I think that, generally speaking, that such people can love each other is a given. But if you're thinking of marrying someone and you both have some commitment to your own religions, you will have to figure out what you want to do if you have children. That becomes, a lot of people, because they're in love, defer that discussion, and then it becomes a source of tension, or can become a real source of tension in the marriage. Do we baptize the children? Do we raise the children as Christian? Let's say it's a Christian and a Jew. Do we raise the children as a Jew? Do we raise them as a Christian? Do we raise them as both? Whatever that means, theologically that's not quite possible, but I understand sociologically how it is. So my general belief is that people ideally marry someone of their own religion. And now, if you have no religion, this obviously often doesn't matter, but a lot of people do become religiously more motivated once they're married, and they face the question, am I going to raise my children without religion? I don't think it's a great idea. I think it's a beautiful thing for a child to have. I actually think it's a beautiful thing for an adult to have. Depending, obviously, I assume it's a good religion. And there is good religion and bad religion, just like there's good and bad of anything else. So that's a tough issue. It really is, and people have to seriously think that through. Melody, 22, Chattanooga, Tennessee, Prager Force. Thank you, Melody. We really are appreciative of your work. Who is your favorite figure of the American Revolution? I'm not good on favorite figures. It's a very interesting question. I've been asked this on the radio so often, and I disappoint my listeners every time. So, Dennis, if you could have a cigar or a dinner with any historical figure, who would it be? And I never have a good answer. I mean, there are so many in my mind that would be... There's no one name that comes to mind. I mean, obviously, Washington was a giant, but you know what? It was a generation of giants. The more I know about the founders, the more I am amazed at how brilliant and wise they were to have made at the time, the one truly free country and the freest that has ever existed. That's why I think I mentioned a previous time, but I may not have. The French gave the American people the Statue of Liberty. They didn't give it to Canada. They didn't give it to Britain. They didn't give it to any other country. They didn't give it to an Asian country. America has embodied freedom. It's not any longer, by the way. As the left gains ascendancy, the left has never treasured freedom. It treasures equality, but it does not treasure freedom. It treasures big government, and big government is in direct distinction to liberty. The bigger the government, the less the liberty. It's definitional. It's not an opinion. It's just the way it works. Because as government expands, so do laws. And they take over more and more of our life. America's been an aberration. It was founded with the belief in limited government, that people will morally police themselves with moral religion. That's how it was founded. But you don't learn that stuff anymore in school. So anyway, Franklin was another great one. And with all his flaws, Jefferson was, Adams was. I mean, that's the point. There are so many great figures from the Revolution. Okay, let's see. Also Tennessee, Philip 20, Memphis. What technology do we have today that you wish you'd have had back when you were younger? That's funny. Well, you know, I'm torn. It's a good question. Oh, I know the answer. I was thinking about the cell phone. Because when I was a kid, there were no cell phones. You had to go to a phone booth if you wanted to call somebody. And, you know, if there was no phone booth, you couldn't call anybody. On the other hand, what was wrong with that? To constantly be in touch. Look, I use it as much as anybody else, and it's a tremendous help in my life. Just text somebody, I'm coming, or, you know, it's good. People, you can be in touch with whom you need to be in touch with at any moment, anywhere you are on earth. So I love that. I agree. But there was something, you know, look, I'll call you when I'm in a phone booth, or I'll call you when I get home. And people were fine. But anyway, that's not the one. The one that I wish I had when I was a kid is the simple computer because of word processing. I never learned to touch type. And so I wrote much. I didn't write much because I made so many errors when I typed. And I'd have to erase them. You don't even know about this, but erase them on paper, and or go back a space on an IBM Selectric. It was awful. Once word processing came in, like most people now use Word, I went from 2 columns a year to 52 columns a year, and of course written now 9 or 10 books, whatever the number is. If you hear my dog in the background, this is proof that this is completely spontaneous. Anyway, he's agreeing. He reads my works and benefits immensely. But I remember when I got my first word processing program on a computer, and I went out of my mind. I still go out of my mind because I write so much better because I could constantly edit and edit and edit and edit and edit without retyping a whole page. Last questions from Isaac, also PragerForce, thank you, 21 in Los Angeles. How does a consumer-centric business stay true to Judeo-Christian values in a world where we seem required to appease to leftists in order to survive? The answer is if you're publicly owned, it's impossible, I guess. But if you're privately owned, you stay true to your principles. In life, that's the way you work in life. Compromising your principles in the long run is not a meaningful life. I mean, some compromise is necessary. I am not a utopian. I understand that. And I'm not a purist. But people should be ultimately true to what they believe in. They try to close down Chick-fil-A. Mayors said, the mayor of Chicago said they're not welcome in my town because the owner of Chick-fil-A is a committed Christian who does not believe in same-sex marriage, for example. So now, is that a criterion in America? You can't have a business if you believe in male-female marriage? No matter how well you treat your gay employees and gays in your life, that doesn't matter. You have to think like the left does in order to even have a business. That's totalitarian, folks. That's frightening. But they stay true to their principles and they prevailed because most Americans still prefer freedom of conscience to a compromise for the sake of the of better relations with the media. It's an important question. So anyway, thanks for being with me from my home to your home. Take care. I'm Dennis Prager. Bye.